Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Everybody, it's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday via podcast1.com and iTunes. Thank you for downloading and streaming and listening. Wherever you do it, however you do it, it is greatly appreciated. Good to be here with you for another episode this week. Hope everybody enjoyed KK Downing last week. Of course, a founding member of Judas Priest, who we have found out now that Judas Priest not on the ballot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. For you guys that follow along and care about such things, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced their nominees earlier this week. And it's very important to let you guys know, because there's always seems to be so much confusion about this. When the nominees come out, sometimes people assume that actually means that those people are going into the Hall of Fame. That is not the case. It's very confusing to people that don't follow along, but these are nominees, the names that have come out. They are not the artist being inducted. What happens now is that that list of names goes to the voters, which I am one of. And we get to work from that list. What will happen is I get a ballot in the mail. So do the other voters. There's about 1,000 of us total from the music industry and what have you. And we get to pick from those names. And I think it's 5 that we get to pick. And we send in our 5 picks that we'd like to see inducted into the Hall of Fame based off of the list of nominees. That list of nominees this year, it does not have a lot for the hard rock fan at all. It's very disappointing, I think, with the exception of the inclusion of Def Leppard, who have come up on a ballot for the first time in 13 years, and I think will get in. But in case you haven't heard, that list includes Radiohead, Def Leppard, Stevie Nicks, Rage Against the Machine, The Cure, Devo, Janet Jackson, Kraftwerk, LL Cool J, Roxy Music, Todd Rundgren, John Prine, MC5, Chaka Khan, and The Zombies. Of that list, we get to pick, I think it's 5, all the voters, and then from that, Those tallies are put in, and the top 5 or 6 vote getters are the ones who are actually inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, Judas Priest were on the ballot for the first time last year. Shockingly, or maybe not so, Judas Priest not even on the ballot this year. And a lot of people wonder what that's about, and a lot of Priest fans very upset about it, and I understand it. I would be too, and I am. I voted for Priest last year. But here's what's going on. We all know the Hall of Fame doesn't give a flying you-know-what about metal. They do it reluctantly when they have to put that genre in. And The truth of the matter is that in fan voting, which does not mean anything really in terms of the artist getting into the Hall of Fame, it does have some influence for the committee and the nominees to see that there is a big base for that band. Judas Priest finished fifth in fan voting last year. That's not good. Their fan base clearly did not get that much engaged in this. The other thing is, when Judas Priest was on the ballot last year and it went out to the voters, I voted for them, but I can tell you for a fact they did not rank highly in voting amongst the voting members. See, once a band is on the ballot and goes out to the voters, they can then, the Hall of Fame then sees information as to, among their 1,000 voters, how many people feel strongly about that band going into the Hall of Fame. And you have to take that into consideration too. If you're a band and you missed the Hall of Fame by like 20, 30 votes, that's one thing. If you're a band and you missed the Hall of Fame by a wide margin because only a very small percentage of the voting panel voted for you, well, then the nominating committee says, well, there's not a lot of love for this band, and they don't even put them on the ballot again. Now, let's be honest, there's also a lot of bands there might not be a lot of love for, but they're going to keep cramming down your throat because it's what they want to see go in. Kraftwerk has been on this list a few times. Janet Jackson has as well. The whole thing is a mess. It really is. And it's ironic this thing is called the Rock Hall of Fame, and there's very little rock that really gets proper representation. Don't get me wrong. There's a million bands in there deserving, and most of the bands on this ballot are as well. But the clear bias against hard rock music is so unbelievably obvious and has been for so long, including how long bands were snubbed before they finally did go in. Bands like Rush and Kiss and Alice Cooper and Deep Purple and Black Sabbath. I mean, snubbed for years before they finally went in. So that's all you need to know. But it's very telling. Judas Priest, not even in consideration for this year. That just flat out sucks and is ridiculous. Maiden, never included or considered yet, and countless other great rock bands that continue to be snubbed by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'll be voting. If you listen to my daily show on Sirius XM Volume, I actually do and let the audience take one of my votes, and we'll do that again once the ballots come out. And that is a very, very major thing, by the way, folks, because one of my votes means as much as the entire fan vote. So when we do that show on my SiriusXM program, get involved in it, because it's, you know, let your voice be heard there, because that is as much impactful as an entire fan vote. And, you know, I've got some thoughts here. Obviously, I'm voting for Leopard. Obviously, I'm voting for Rage, who, you know, even though it's still kind of early, I mean, they've been on eligible 2 years. They've been on the ballot 2 years. I was shocked they didn't get in last year. Full disclosure, Tom Morello is a good friend of mine, as many know. In further full disclosure, Tom Morello is on the nominating committee. So I don't know how that works when he's in the room. I don't think he lobbies for his own band, but I have no idea. But look, whatever you think about Rage, they were a very influential, very impactful band, so they are totally deserving. And, you know, MC5, the other real rock representation, it's honestly not a band a lot of people know, but it's a band that, you know, had an influence for sure and has their fan base. So those are the only three pure hard rock or rock based, you know, things on there. The Zombies I voted for last year. Todd Rundgren is deserving for all of his work. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I just gave you my five right there. I'll think more about it. We'll get into it when we get on the air and I actually get the ballot, which will be coming soon. So that was the big news from this past week. Last weekend, I had a tremendously crazy weekend. Hosted Sebastian Bach at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa. Baz sounded great. Had a great time there. Saturday, I flew to Huntington Beach, California. Hosted Sammy Hagar's High Tide Beach Party in Huntington Beach. Had a crazy experience getting there. Had a private plane that was supposed to take me there cancel on me, which just was beyond nuts. If you listen to my volume show, I went through my whole crazy experience trying to get there. And I did get there regardless of my craziness trying to get to the event. The event itself was really good. Sold out at 14,000 on the beach. Sammy Hagar, a true freak of nature in the greatest of ways, soon to be 71, singing Van Halen, singing Montrose, singing Led Zeppelin, singing his solo stuff. Satriani went out and did some Chicken Foot. Vince Neil was there. They played some Motley. REO Speedwagon was on the bill. Just a great time, a great new festival, very well run. And I think, I know that you're going to see Sammy's event happen again next year and likely expand out to 2 days. Great launch for Sammy. Got to intro him in front of 14,000 people. Just great. And I saw Sammy Hagar. I saw Michael Anthony. I talked to Vince Neil. I talked to everyone backstage. And just, you know, Vince and Sammy and Michael, two of my favorite people on the planet. Two of the best people. And Vince, you know, always been super cool with Vince as well. Kevin Cronin, great dude. Had a great time talking to him. And just great people. A lot of fun. Really was. Really, really well run. An amazing setting. Amazing weather right on the beach there. They set up the stage. Incredible. So congrats to Sammy on a great launch. It's inspirational what this man is doing at 71. He's still great on stage. He's still in great shape. Vocally, he still nails it. His work ethic, his philanthropy, what this guy's doing with his business and music. And at 71, with all the money in the world, he could do nothing if he wanted to. It's just really, really incredible. Just an incredible guy. So that was my weekend. This weekend coming up, I'm back in Tulsa on Friday to host Tom Kiefer at the IDL Ballroom. Looking forward to that and hope to see you there if you are attending. We have a great time at those shows at the IDL. October 19th, I'm in El Dorado, Arkansas with Sammy Hagar again, as well as Brett Michaels and Lita Ford. Don't forget the Big Dio Bowling event is October 25th. There may be a rainbow broadcast the day before. Just saying, keep an eye open for another Trunk Nation LA invasion. We got a lot of stuff going on in October and November. Follow on Twitter at Eddie Trunk for info and updates. Now, speaking of the LA invasion, the last one I did from the patio of the Rainbow Bar and Grill, the second one, for those that don't know, I'm doing this series called the Trunk Nation LA Invasion, where I go to LA once a month, take over the Rainbow, the legendary landmark, and broadcast from the patio of the Rainbow Bar and Grill. We have a great setup. The first one, we had Slash and Tom Morello. The second one, Steve Vai and Sebastian Bach were the featured guests. Other artists dropped by as well. This happened a few weeks back. I'm bringing it to you now, courtesy of SiriusXM and my show On Volume, which is called Trunk Nation and heard live every day on Channel 106, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and is available on demand on the SiriusXM app. Here on the podcast, you get a little taste of what I do on a daily basis on the show On Volume. And this was the last LA invasion. Now, I had Katie edit this up as best as she could because it was a bit of a free-for-all. Steve Vai showed up first. Sebastian showed up a little bit late. They did a couple things together. And then throughout the course of the night, some other people jumped on the mic. I don't know what Katie left in and left out. She had to work hard on this one, and I appreciate that because it was just a bit chaotic being a live broadcast with a live audience. But the featured guests who you will hear from, Steve Vai, Sebastian Bach, and then the two of them together. And at the time I'm recording this open, I don't know how Katie, you know, what she did and didn't leave in, but that's the crux of what's coming up. Predominantly Vai and Bach on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast, live from the Rainbow Bar and Grill in Los Angeles from about 2.5-3 weeks ago. And like I said, the next one is going to be coming up very soon as this is a new monthly feature that I'm doing in Southern California for my SiriusXM show. Remember, I also have a terrestrial radio show on like 30 radio stations across the country weekly on the FM side. There's a bunch, you know, 6 live radio shows on SiriusXM, the FM show, this podcast, and don't forget about Trunk Fest, my series on Access TV covering music festivals. They are replaying season one every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Access TV. So get caught up on season one, shooting season two right now. Access TV Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, Trunk Fest. Make sure you check them out. Much appreciated. We'll take a little break. We'll come back. We'll take you to the Rainbow in L.A. with Steve Vai and Sebastian Bach on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you or a loved one get leg or foot cramps, you know how painful and disruptive they can be. Muscle cramps can jolt you out of a sound sleep or interrupt your daily life. I have had that happen, folks. Listen carefully, because I can recently tell you, or I can tell you, I should say, recently about a product I learned about called TheraWorks Relief. It's a non-greasy foam that's proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and reduce muscle soreness. Plus, with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start, so you can get a full night's sleep or do the activities you love without worry. TheraWorks Relief. It only takes minutes to apply. It absorbs quickly and it works. People love the results. You've probably seen Dr. Drew Pinsky on TV talking about TheraWorks Relief, and many of my colleagues on the radio are also talking about TheraWorks. Now, the holiday season is around the corner, so you know someone who suffers with muscle cramps and muscle soreness, I'm sure. And I'll tell you, I can't think of a better gift than TheraWorks Relief. It is something I've actually used, and I've not had the problem since. Make it your choice, too. Get TheraWorks Relief today in the pain relief aisle at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, or by talking to your pharmacist. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com.
You've seen him in the hit movie Night School with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish. But you can hear Rob Riggle every week on the funniest sportscast around with co-host Sarah Tiana.
The way it usually works is you do the script as written, because mm-hmm. that's what the studio paid for. Then you do another take, same thing, only with notes. Then on the third pass, they'll come back and say, okay, anybody got a thought? Yeah, can I try this? No. Can I try this? No. Moving on.
Check out Riggle's Picks every Thursday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hey, if you guys like my show, you're going to love John Taffer, No Excuses, on Podcast One. The best-selling author and entrepreneur behind Bar Rescue is not taking anyone's nonsense, and he's telling it like it is. And this week, he's joined by actress Jenny McCarthy. Check out John Taffer, No Excuses, every Tuesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
We're back. Let's get to the Rainbow in L.A. This is called the Trunk Nation L.A. Invasion. It's a monthly broadcast I do for SiriusXM on my show On Volume on Channel 106. Steve Vai, Sebastian Bach amongst the guests. And let's take you there right now on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. And I've told this story before, but not on this show, but Steve was playing in my hometown in Jersey.
Yep.
And you, I ran into you. You were
it was
jogging.
So weird. I was jogging outside of the gig, and I all of a sudden I saw you coming out of the venue, right. And I'm like, "What are you doing here?"
Yeah, yeah.
And it was your daughter had like a recital or something.
Yeah, I was taking my daughter to a thing that she was doing, a dance thing or something.
Yeah.
And then you were. It was the experience. No, that's when I saw it you was, for Experience Hendrix.
Oh, that was the Experience Hendrix.
Yes.
Oh, okay. But the other show that I played that I dragged you on stage.
Seven Dust was there.
Seven Dust. And that's when you built the song.
We built the song.
And with Seven Dust, that's in the DVD. It's the space between the notes.
It's documented?
That's... Oh, sure, yeah.
What, was that shot?
Yeah, it was your... I didn't get you, though, because I'd only decided to do it at the end of the tour.
Oh, okay.
So I had to grab everybody's iPhone footage.
So were you doing that every night, bringing people up to build a song?
I did that for 257 shows.
See, I thought I was special, Steve.
You are special, Ed. You built the work... Best song.
Oh, now we get the truth. Did some of the people that you brought up and have brought up on stage, have they come up with some stuff that you've been like, wow, I mean, you've discovered people through it?
Well, I didn't discover like great, like, you know, talents on an instrument or anything, but some people were inspired, because you can take anybody, and we did this all around the world. I mean, we were in in Russia and every place, and you just bring somebody on the stage and you tell them to sing a drum beat. How hard is that? Even if they say, I don't know what you mean. It's a beat.
Yeah.
You know? And then they sing a bass part and then a melody, and we jam. And that was a, you know, it works all the time. But some of the best ones were when I like get like these little kids, like 5 years old, six right. years old. They're just the best.
Yeah, well, really there's so much to talk to you about in the time that we have here. And what I want to start with, though, because we are doing this with a live audience here at the Rainbow, you are not. They're fired up. They're ready to go.
They're attacking us.
We're in prime time. We're in happy hour time, 6 p.m. Pacific, right? But you are not. You are not originally from California. You're originally from New York, of course.
Yeah.
When did you first come here?
1980.
Was it with Zappa?
Yep.
What brought you here?
Yep, it was Frank. I had just turned 20. I was working for him for a couple of years, transcribing, and I moved right around the corner. You could almost see my house from here. I was right on Fairfax.
What were your impressions of it at that time? Did you immediately fall in love with Southern California? You were like, I got to move there? Or was it the work that brought you here?
Well, it was. I wanted to move here since as long as I can remember. When I was a little boy, I had this pet monkey. Actually, it was a stuffed monkey.
Oh, okay.
And I used to kind of like, you know, tear it apart. And one day my mother threw it away. And I asked her where it went. And she said, Stephen, your monkey went to California.
So you came to find your monkey.
So I came to find my monkey.
Did you find it?
There they are.
They're all here at the Rainbow. And so what was your first experience here at the Rainbow? Did you have some nights here at Steve High?
I lived right around the corner in the 80s. This whole strip was like an open circus, man. I mean, it would take you about 30 minutes to move 20 feet.
Right. And people
car.
Putting the flyers and all that on
oh,
the street?
Oh, just everybody dressed to the nines. It was the 80s, you know, so it was just a fabulous time to be here. And this is a, you know, it's a notorious place, too. You know, it's fantastic. And you know what's interesting about the Rainbow?
What?
The food is really good.
It is?
But I love this place. I used to come here just all the time.
And, of course, Lemmy was the fixture here.
Lemmy was here every night.
We're in what's called Lemmy's Lounge. It's been rebranded that since Lemmy passed. But correct me if I'm wrong. You played on a Motorhead record.
Funny. Lemmy was standing right where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
And I walked up and I went up to him and I said, you know, we just started talking. And I said, well, how come you never asked me to play on any of your records? And he said, I'll be at your house Friday at 1 o'clock. And he came and he brought the tapes, and we spent like 10 hours together just hanging out. The solo didn't take long, but he was just so interesting. He was just the best.
Yeah. Were you ever a guy? Like, I've known you for a long time, but I don't know you from back then.
Yeah.
Were you a partier? Did you make the scene? Were you into that world, or never? You never really went down those roads?
I was more of a witness to the extremity, extremes of it, like extremes that you can't even believe, but. More of a colorful fly on the wall, as I'd say, you know. But I liked to party back then. I never went over.
You were never the guy that they found out back in the parking lot, passed out by his car.
No, that's when I was a teenager in a rock band. That's when they used to find me passed out in the back.
Well, there's a lot to talk to you about, and there's a lot of course, history we can talk about. But I want to, before we go back, I want to talk about now, because the reason why you're here. Was you reached out to me about a very cool event and special benefit that you're doing, and you wanted to come on and promote it. And I said, hey, Steve, I'm going to be doing this thing in L.A., and I said, why don't you come on, and you're nice enough to be here. So let's take care of that, because this is a very cool thing you're doing. Talk about
Thank you. Well, you know, it centers around this concept that I had for like 25 years, and the idea was to create a nonstop jam session where people can come up and play, and the music doesn't stop for 52 hours. So I was waiting for the right time, and it took, like, you remember Ruta, right? Ruta Sepetys?
No.
Oh, she was my manager a while ago.
Okay.
For like 20 years, fantastic. And she helped me put the structure of it together, but I just held on to it. And I'm on the board of this foster care home called Extraordinary Families. They're out of L.A. You know, fantastic organization. I mean, you know, every year there's like 20,000 kids in the foster care system, and they're looking for homes and they need mentors. So I like to be involved in something hands-on, you know. I became a part of this organization, and it was a good opportunity to do the jam-a-thon as a fundraiser. So the name of it is the Big Mama Jama Jamathon, and it's taking place September 28th. We kick off at noon.
Okay.
And it goes for 52 hours to Sunday, the 30th, at 4. And it's at Musicians Institute. They just built this really cool new venue. It's called the Live House. You'll see it eventually. It's so great.
And it's here. It's here.
It's right here, right by their school.
Okay.
Yeah, right there in Hollywood. And we started putting it together and started reaching out to people, and I've got so many great guests coming down that are going to jam.
Can you name some of them?
Oh, yeah. Well, John Five, you said, is coming down.
Okay.
I've got Lee Rittenhouse doing a set.
It's a very eclectic mix of players.
Very eclectic mix. Moby's coming down. I can't think of the list right now, but...
Is it online?
Yeah, it's all online. You go to jamathon.org.
Okay.
And we got like people, even like Al DiMeola is going to do a set.
Wow. Okay, so you're going to have some jazz stuff going on? And
oh, yeah. That's not a lot of jazz because it's a jamathon, so people may not know a lot of jazz standards.
Right.
You know, so
right.
We just get up there and we play, and Derek Day is going to be there.
Who's playing next door here at the Roxy,
that's
I
right.
understand,
yeah.
in a second. So
yep.
You're not there. You're not pulling like a double all-nighter. You're not there all the whole time, are you?
I'm a little too old for that.
I was going to say, so
but
how
I'll
much time
there.
Are you going to be able to log
I'm
in
gonna,
this
I'm going to I'm going to probably cut out 4 or 5 hours to go take a nap.
Right, right.
But I'll be there.
All right.
I'm so excited about it. And there's, if you go to jamathon.org, you can check it out and come on down. I've opened it up now for people to just bring their instruments for some interesting audience participation.
Okay. You know? Well, you love that. We just talked about people coming up on stage.
There you go. So. I'll be doing what I did with you with some of these folks.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sure they'll have a
and
ton
really
more talent.
And it's really for a great cause. And the cool thing is the auction that we got going on. I mean, everybody's been so generous. All my friends And we have a pledge campaign, so we're gonna do good.
And this is all online. People can learn
online,
more about it.
Jamathon.org.
Jamathon.org. Now, the other thing that you have coming up, and I'm going to be hosting one of the shows you're doing in South Florida at the Hard Rock with this, but you're doing Generation X again, right?
Yep, yeah.
And the same lineup as last time?
Mm-hmm.
So run that down for everybody who wasn't aware of it, because it was killer last time. I went to it. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's so much fun, too. It was another concept where I thought, how cool would it be to have one backing band and five completely insane guitar players coming on and, like, doing, you know, getting together and playing together at times, but with parts that are really organized, you know, so it's not just chaotic kind of playing. And I kind of put it into genres, you know, like metal, rock, blues, fusion.
Right.
And I wrote all my favorite guitar players down. And in the metal category, I had Zakk Wylde, Yngwie Malmsteen, Nuno, and Tosin. And I called them, and they, right off the bat, they wanted to do it.
Great.
And Yngwie, and... You know.
For people who didn't see this, I was blown away by it. I saw it in Vegas, and what I love so much about it is that it starts with Tosin Abasi, who comes out, and then...
But we all come out at first.
You all come out at first, and then it goes to Tosin's solo moment, which then I think goes to Nuno.
Well, then it's Tosin and Nuno do a song.
But that's the point, is that everybody crosses over as a sort of a handoff.
Yeah.
So then Nuno and Zakk do a song.
Oh, man, they do Sideways. I just finished mixing it. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you recorded?
Oh, well, we did the American tour, and it went so well, we decided to do Asia.
And I
was able to record 7 of the Asian tours.
Video, audio, or both?
No, we just did audio.
Okay.
And it was really great. It was very successful. So I ended up when I leave this seat, I'm going back and mixing more. And I just finished Frankenstein the other day. We did with 4 guitar players.
For the Generation X?
For the CD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have a pledge campaign going for that too. I'm selling myself.
so you're going to eventually have an album out of Generation X of all these guys playing?
Yes.
Both live and some new studio stuff?
No, we didn't get that far.
It was yet. All live.
All live.
Stuff that you did live. Because I think it was Nuno that told me on the last one that you... Was it his idea to do a Queen song that instrumentally the whole... Was it Bohemian? Or one of them. There was some story about a Queen thing.
Well, yeah. That was the idea was to do Bohemian Rhapsody for 5 guitars. And I did it. I mean, I created all the parts and got every one of Freddie's vocals, and you got to hear it on guitars. It's unbelievable, but we just didn't have enough time in rehearsal.
Right.
And Nuno was going to take the lead on that one because he's Well, he's very good friends with Brian, and he's a huge Queen fan, as we all are.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, if we get time this time, we may try to work it up. But it's hard. I mean, you know those vocals in that song.
Unbelievable.
To play them on the guitar in perfect, harmony.
Yeah.
You got to breathe together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, but maybe we'll get it one day.
Did you have any thought at any point to do Generation X this next run and change the people, or do you feel it's better to establish a core since everybody works so well?
Well, that's a good question, because there was situations. The hardest thing about Generation X is trying to get everybody's schedule together.
Right.
It's like Zach never stops touring.
Right.
It seems, and
Yngwie's, three bands, yeah.
Yngwie's out all the time, and I thought about swapping it up, but I just love being with these guys so much, and the chemistry and the show itself and the balance of the way the show flows.
Right.
It's so diverse, and it's still within that heavy genre. I don't want to change it, so I've just decided if we can do it, we can do it. Now, if it does change, it would be completely different.
Right.
Like it might be a Generation X blues tour.
Got it.
Where it's all blues players or something like
that. One of the things I love so much about it is not only the virtuosity of all the players, but it's entertaining. Like, I'm not a guitar player. I can't play anything, but it kept my attention. Everybody brings something different to the table. The crossover with everybody, it really keeps your attention. Sometimes you do this so brilliantly with your own show, of course, as well, because you're such a great performer, but there's something there for everybody. It's not, if you're not a guitar player, you can still really get something from it and still be entertained.
Well, yeah, and that's why, the sets are relatively short, and there's always movement. Like you were saying, it went from Tosin to Tosin and Nuno, and then Nuno, and then Nuno and Zach.
Right.
And, so everybody does like a set, and then Yngwie and I do a really beautiful song, Black Star, together. And then we come out with four guys, and we do a song, and then we all five come out. We start with all five, and then so it's constantly changing. You know what I mean? We did Highway Star, five guitars, and all the parts are organized. I listened to it the other day. You're gonna die when you.
I can't wait to hear this. Of the guitar players you have on it, was there one guy? Like, of course you knew them all, mm-hmm. and you knew all their playing, and that's why you picked them, because you appreciate all of them. But was there somebody that through the course of the tour as a player surprised you, maybe did something or had a side to them you were unaware of, or just, that you were, wow, I didn't know he could do that too, sort of thing?
All of them in some respect, both personality-wise
right.
and also performance-wise. Yeah. They all just, they stunned me. Tosin is just his whole mental approach to music and his chops are just unique. And Nuno really, really surprised me. He's just so, his personality on stage is so engaging. And he's such a great singer. And his guitar playing is like rapid fire machine
yeah.
gun, And he's very, very professional, And Zach is just so, so funny. I like looking at him, watching him walk around, because everything he does
the chain,
is just like
the beard,
entertaining.
The vest.
It's so great.
Father Vi.
Father Steve, And his playing, when he gets into that zone, I've never seen anybody get so, myopic about something. He just goes, and it's beautiful. And yeah. Yngwie is Yngwie, man. He's as intense as it gets.
How was he on the road? Like, everybody's heard the notorious stories about Yngwie, but he was well behaved with you?
He was great. Listen, you got to know Yngwie. You got to know. I mean, he's very professional, actually.
Oh, he's been great with me. I've known him forever. He's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I've never had a problem with him, but
you can't mess around with, this is what he needs. And when you supply that, everything is good, and he's great.
I'll tell everybody a quick Yngwie story. When we were doing that metal show, we had a guitar player later on in the shows that would just play, shred up in the audience, and just do segments in a break. That idea came from Yngwie, because Yngwie, when I booked him in the very first season, he showed up. Yeah. He flew up from Florida in the full regalia.
Oh, it's never without it.
With the guitar. And I go, Yngwie, we don't have any ability to play on here. He goes, we got to play. So we rounded up this little amp, right?
Yeah.
And he puts the amp, and the audio guy for the TV show puts the mic, positions it away from the amp at what he felt was the proper distance for TV miking.
Yeah.
So we take a break waiting for the segment, and the audio guy would keep coming out of the booth, and he kept readjusting the mic. And he goes, "Who the hell keeps moving this mic?" And I just look at Yngwie, and Yngwie gives me the sign, like, he's fiddling with the mic. So the audio guy would put it one spot, and when he wasn't looking, Yngwie would get up and move it one spot closer.
And
then finally they confronted each other. And the guy's like, "No, you don't understand. This is how it's mic'd for TV." And I thought he was going to have an Yngwie meltdown, and which I was kind of hoping for a second, actually. And
you don't want to see an Yngwie meltdown, brother.
And he takes this but to Yngwie's credit, he takes a step back, takes a deep breath, and he looks at me. He looks at the guy. He goes, "Okay, it does what we need to do, right?"
Yeah.
And I just looked at him. I go, "Someone's been working with you, buddy." "Someone's been working with you." And he's going, "It's all good. It's good. This is what we do." And I was like, wow, you know, he like you said, a total pro, but he learned.
Well, I think a lot of that perceived arrogance in the early days was a cultural thing, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And, of course, you and Yngwie shared the distinction of both having been in Alcatraz.
That's
you
right.
replaced him in Alcatraz.
No, not an easy task.
Did you compare notes on that at all?
Oh, we chuckle about it. Look, one of the best things about the Generation X tour is the tour bus.
Oh, hanging out. You guys are all on the same bus?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hanging out till 4 or 5 in the morning, just telling stories. I mean, and Yngwie's got incredible stories about growing up in Sweden.
Sure.
Or listening to music. We went through the 70s phase. We were listening to all this great 70s music.
You know? Yeah.
And they're just, you know, I mean, it had its challenges in the beginning. Everybody had to kind of get their sea legs together with each other. But then once everybody saw the, you know, the big picture of what we were doing, and it just, we really bonded. It's great.
That's a reality show right there, on that bus. You put a few GoPros in the corner. The problem is, if everybody knew it was being recorded, they wouldn't be saying the same things, probably.
Well,
you know, there'd be some editing going on, which would make it not as fun, but that's
Never get that past a few of the guys, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure. So you know, for speaking of Yngwie, you know, when I talked to him, for him, his introduction to guitar and what made him pick up a guitar, he's told me many times, is when he was growing up, he saw Hendrix burning the guitar.
Yeah.
For you, where was it for you? What was the Steve Vai moment that you said, "I got to learn how to play that thing"?
I walked past my sister's room when I was 12 and I heard, bow, 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 Led Zeppelin Heartbreaker. And that guitar solo, that was it. It was over for me.
What was the first guitar you got? Then what happens? Do you turn to your parents? How old were you?
At that time I was about 10. But I didn't get my first guitar until I was 12. And I had a friend that had a guitar in his room that his mother brought him from, like, Sears Roebuck or something. It was a Tesco Del Rey. Do you remember those?
No.
Not yet. They were really cool. They're kind of small guitars, and they had whammy bars. And I kind of knew what a whammy bar was. And as soon as I saw that guitar with the whammy bar, I said, "That's what I want," you know? And I would go over his house to hang out with him just so I could look at his guitar on the wall, you know? And I said to him one day, "Why don't you play that? You know, you've got this cool thing, you know?" And he goes, "Oh, I don't want it. I'll sell it to you for $5. And I was like, "You got it." And that was it.
You don't still have it, do you?
No, no. Unfortunately, I kind of gave it to one of my students years later. That guitar, you hear the story how, "Oh, I used to sleep with my guitar."
Yeah.
No, I slept with my guitar.
For real.
Every night. Yeah.
How long did it take you to get good at it? I mean, did it come quick to you, or were you a slow learner?
It's taken me about 45 years.
Oh, stop.
You know, I'm still working on it.
Oh, stop. I think everybody here could agree Steve Vai has mastered the instrument, don't you think?
You never feel that way when you're on the inside, I'll tell you that. I thought I was the worst. I had no intentions or aspirations about being successful. That whole thing just seemed completely out of my reach. But I do know one thing. I loved, loved, loved playing it. Everything else went away. And I would just, because when you can't do something and you practice it and all of a sudden you can do it, it's like Christmas every day, you know?
Yeah.
Or if, like, all of a sudden you're playing a little riff from, you know, one of your favorite bands, like a Led Zeppelin song.
Right.
And plus, I had, like, what I call the Vai advantage. I had Joe Satriani as a teacher when I was 12, you know? How do you beat that? We lived in the same town. And he was always great. You know, Joe was always great.
Is Joe, how much older is Joe than you?
I think four or five years.
So if you were 12, he was giving lessons at like 18, 19?
15, I think he was 15 or 16, 16.
That Satriani was giving lessons.
He could. He was given lessons when he came out of the chute. I mean, the guy is just, you know, brilliant from head to foot, you know.
My gosh. And that of course, touched off a friendship and relationship that lasts to this day, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. All right, so Jamathon is what Steve is here to talk about. Again, go to jamathon.org, and it's going to be 52 hours, did you
52
say?
52 hours. Come on down to Musicians Live House. Bring an instrument, and you'll see some great players. We got some really great players. And go to jamathon.org to check out the and if I can make this one plug.
Oh, I'm not sending you away. I'm just going to a break. Oh, I don't want you to leave.
Oh.
We're not even close. I got much more to get into with you.
Okay.
I'm not sending you away. You just Ubered in traffic. I would never do that to you. 20 minutes, get Vi out of here. You stay the whole time if you want, man. Right. But I just want you to get your plugs in for this because I know it's important to you. So we want to remind
people. Well, we set up this one thing that's pretty brilliant. The Red Cross uses it. It's called Text to Give.
Okay.
And it's very simple. You can just text the numbers. I got to check. I'll find the number.
We'll
I'll
go to break.
You go to
we'll
break.
Come back. We'll give you the numbers. And here's a story I want Steve to tell. Here's a nice setup. All right. When we come back from the break, for people who have not heard this before, Steve has played with so many amazing bands, his own stuff, the Zappa stuff. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But of course, everybody loves, and I think a lot of us wish and would love to see the David Lee Roth band one more time. Well, Steve, and Billy, and Matt, and Dave, a few years ago, or maybe even more recently, came this close.
Yeah.
Like seconds away from doing a couple songs, a stone's throw where we're sitting, and then it got stopped right before the curtain dropped. And I'll have Steve tell that story when we come back right after this. Back with more with Steve Vai, Sebastian Bach, and a whole lot more from the Rainbow Bar and Grill in L.A. on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, folks, Pluto TV, it's the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch free. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. You can download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed. No sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get you back to the Rainbow and this week's podcast featuring Steve Vai and Sebastian Bach. This is a story that if you guys never heard it, you got to hear it. Of course, everybody knows that Steve, and I said, what did I say before? Matt Bissonette by accident.
Yeah,
Greg Bissonette.
Right.
Matt's his brother who plays bass, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, so the original David Lee Roth band,
mm-hmm.
When was it? 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it was about that. But you know what happens every year, like Billy and I and Greg and Matt, because Matt was in the band at one point, and Tuggle, our keyboard player, we get together and we have dinner, you know, just because we
with
you know,
Roth or without Roth?
Well, he's usually not there.
Okay. All right.
But so we were talking, and it was mentioned, you know, that Edelman Smile was coming up on a 30th year anniversary.
Right.
And also they would tell me about this Lucky Strike bowling alley that has like these fanfares going on Wednesday nights. You know, there's like a this big extravaganza every Wednesday night. It's like a jam, mm-hmm. and a lot of people go down there and play. And they said, "Why don't you come down and we'll do a couple of songs from the Edelman Smile record, like Yankee Rose and Shy Boy." And I thought, yeah, that'd be great. It'd be a kind of like 30th year nod. And then I thought, well, maybe, I'll reach out to Dave. Maybe he'd be interested. Who knows? And I didn't think he'd be interested, you know. And he's like, sure, man, I'll be there.
Wow.
You know?
So that's a surprise right there.
Yeah. But we didn't tell anybody.
Right.
We didn't tell anybody Dave was going to be there.
Right.
We were going to use Steel Panther singer.
Ralph. Whose name in the band is Michael Starr.
Yeah.
Ralph. Yeah,
because he's a great singer.
I maintain he should be the singer in Van Halen now if they're looking for someone. But
I know.
He'd be great in the gig, but
yeah,
anyway.
But there's only one Dave Roth, I tell you that.
I know.
And so he was into it, and they announced that it was going to happen without, you know, they didn't say Dave was going to be there, mentioned Ralph, and it just got very packed. So Dave comes over to my house, and we kind of like ran the stuff, and we pull up to the place, and there was a line like probably 5 feet thick that went all the way down
Highland,
but around Hollywood Boulevard.
But let me stop you right there, because you kind of blew past something that I think would be really interesting. You said before you did that, David Lee Roth comes to your house, and you run through the stuff, right?
Well, yeah.
So how long had it been since you sat with David Lee Roth and played Yankee Rose?
Oh, 30 years.
What was that like? I mean,
Well, Dave is really entertaining.
Right.
You know, so just being around him is kind of a hoot, you know?
Right.
So we didn't like rehearse the stuff. We just kind of listened to it and he got a refresher.
Okay.
We weren't planning we didn't rehearse or anything. We were just going to go and play.
Okay. So, but it was a real reconnect for you guys, I would think, right?
Because yeah. Well, I've seen him through the years now and then.
Okay.
You know, we hook up now and then, but so we get up to the place and it's like slammed, right? And that's when people saw Dave was there. So we're in the back, and they had stuffed. This place holds like 350 people,
right?
And they stuffed 1,700 people.
It's a bowling alley.
It's a
bowling. It's truly a bowling alley.
Yeah. And the stage has a curtain, right? And I'm really excited now. I'm like, I love those songs. I loved playing that stuff, you know, like Yankee Rose and Shy Boy.
Sure.
So we're all getting excited. We're backstage, and the way it's laid out, they have a stage and they have a curtain, right?
Yeah.
So you go and you get ready, and you're on the stage, and then the curtain opens. And right, I've got my guitar on. I got Dave's in the back. The band is out there, and I got the sound. And I'm just about to hit. The plan was I was going to hit the first chord, and then the curtains were going to open up, right?
Ugh.
And my guitar is hot, you know. And I'm just about to hit the chord, and one of the guys from the venue comes up and he goes, "Steve, don't play." And I'm like, "What do you mean, don't play?" He goes, "The fire marshal said that you we have to get this place is too crowded. You got to get 500 people out of here." And I'm like, "How are you going to get out of here? I'm playing.
It's two songs. Let's just
two
play
songs." And I'm just about to hit it. He goes, no, don't play. I'm telling you, you'll get in trouble. We'll all get in trouble. You'll be fined." And I said, "Fine, I'll pay the fine." And he goes, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll pay the fine. What could it be? What could it be worth to, you know, not do this?"
Right. Everybody so goes, kicked in a buck on the way out.
Right. So he said, "Okay, wait a minute." And he goes and he comes back and I'm like, part of me is saying, "Just hit the chord, Vi. Just hit it. What are you going to do? What are they going to do? Put you in jail?" You know? The guy comes back and he says, "If you play, they're going to put you in jail." So stupid me didn't play, because that would have been cooler than anything.
Yeah, good publicity.
So I was like struggling, and I'm like, "Nope, you can't." They shut the place down. They actually had the fire marshal there. They had guys they had fire trucks out front. They had people coming in with, like, you know, firemen with, like, axes and stuff.
Oh,
I'm like, what
gosh.
Is this, you know? And it's funny because I go back and I say, "Dave, this gig isn't going to happen. It's too crowded. They're shutting the place down and the fire marshal is here." And Dave, in his infinite press wisdom, says, "Perfect." He goes, "Perfect. Now it'll be on the..." And sure enough, it was everywhere. It was on the... Even the television picked it up, you know, all the news stations, that the gig was closed down because there was too many people and the fire marshal was there. And we came this close to going to the Viper Room and just playing. But then we didn't want to interrupt who was actually playing or just do that kind
of
thing.
Which also holds 300 people, and you would have had the same problem there.
Well, nobody knew we were going to go there. But it was close, you know. It was close.
So was there any dialogue coming off of that, since you guys had reconnected and came so close to doing it, to potentially do it somewhere in a proper form? Like, is there since then? Have you talked to Roth, or I mean, I've talked to Billy about it. I know he'd love to do it. I mean, has there been dialogue about maybe doing it at some point?
Yeah. Well, you know, that kind of dialogue has come up through the years a little bit here and there. And it's something that we're not opposed to, but it's just a matter of, like, everybody's schedules and everything coming together.
Yeah.
Like, when we did that, we talked a little bit about how nice it would be to do anything, maybe redo this gig, you know, the one that we didn't do.
Right.
But then it turned into, like, a gig.
Right.
As opposed to just showing up. And then, so it just kind of, you know, the train kind of pulled away a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any, I mean, I'm sure you got a million great memories and fond stories of your times playing in that band, but is there anything that, you know, you said Roth is such an entertainer, and I've heard so many great stories, both, you know, public and private, about people who spent time with Dave. I've never met Dave.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not, I've never met him. I'd love to talk to him. But do you have can you share anything with the audience? You got something that jumps out at you from your years with Roth?
Well, it was a stunner for me when I entered that band, because I was this kid from Long Island, and when I was touring with Frank, things were a little crazy, you know, but nothing. Nothing like that. Nothing I've ever seen or have been a part of since has been like that.
I imagine you were a Van Halen fan?
Oh, yeah, big time.
So to have had the singer in Van Halen call you...
I know.
I mean, Billy was the same way. Billy told me, and he said this on the air with me twice, so it's nothing that I'm saying, you know, out of school, but Billy told me that twice in the history of Van Halen, that Eddie had reached out to him about potentially joining the band and replacing Michael.
Well, you know, Dave reached out to me about joining Van Halen.
Really?
No.
Nothing would surprise me.
Yeah. Steve I in the band Van Halen.
Steve, okay? Nothing would surprise me with the dynamic with those guys.
Yeah, I guess not.
But Billy, it's crazy. Billy said to me that he was such a big Van Halen fan as they were.
Yeah.
That as cool as it would have been, and I believe he jammed with them, he could never envision himself actually replacing and breaking up the band that he... You know, was...
Well, he did the next best thing. We got in a band together and played with Dave.
So my point is that for you guys to be able to play Van Halen, you played Van Halen songs live with Roth.
Yeah.
The two, all of you must have been like, this is surreal.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. I mean, to be able to, you know, get up there and play Panama. Besides being such cool songs to play on the guitar, you know, because Edward is, you know, Edward, you know, and so brilliant. Just the way the audience responded to it, and the way that the whole rock and roll, the period, you know, the 80s, that whole period, the breaking, you know, when MTV broke, and the crazy clothes we wore, and you know, you could do anything with the lighting rig was in the Guinness Book of World Records. It's true. The most lighting cans of any stage show. And just touring like that was a stunner. I loved every minute of it. I'm so glad I had that opportunity. And to have Dave Roth, you know.
I speak for all the rock fans out there. We'd love to see it one last time. Eat 'em and Smile reunion show. My gosh, that would be unbelievable. I need to also ask you about Zappa, because I talked to Amit on the way here, who's not in town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he, you know, I had dinner with Amit a month or two ago out here, and he said such wonderful things about you and how much you mean to their family, even to this day. But he also said that, you know, you kind of endorsed and will be a part of what they eventually do with this hologram. And I know that the piece has been made with him and Dweezil, which is a huge thing, which is great to see.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, well, he said that, you know, it's good. He just said it's all good right now.
Good.
So what can you say about how you feel about all this, having been so close to Frank, so close to the family, that this you think he would have been down with doing a hologram, and are you excited to play a role in it in some way?
Well, as far as what Frank's perspective of it would have been, nobody really knows, because Frank had this tendency to take any kind of technology and just exaggerate it. You know, he would tear it apart and then go to the people that built it and said, it doesn't do this, it needs to do this, 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 and this. So nobody really knows, but I have been fortunate that I've been, they're were my West Coast family the whole time from the time I moved out here and grown up, and I've always stayed, you know, on good terms and friends with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that anything, I love playing Frank's music. You know, I did the Zappa Play Zappa tour with Dweezil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the technology as it is, and when Ahmed approached me, I think that, you know, if they, it has potential to be a really great kind of a show for the Zappa fans.
Right.
So, and he asked me if I wanted to be a part of it, and I've got so many commitments now that I was able to commit to, you know, some shows. I don't know when they are with it. No, I don't think, nothing has been announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'd love to do, you know, a little handful of shows with that to play Frank's music and just be a part of that kind of thing. But, yeah, who knows what Frank would have done.
Yeah, I didn't know Frank at all, but I was curious about that. You know, whenever somebody passes away, and this hologram thing is an interesting movement, it's a very polarizing thing.
It's very polarizing, and the technology is evolving, and there's various ways to do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to make a hologram, most of the time, and I'm sorry to say, when you watch a hologram, it's not really the person. It's an actor that they filmed with holographic technology that they CGI the head on of the artist. But I don't think that that's what Ahmed is planning, because, like I say, the technology is evolving, and you can't do that with Frank, because if he's playing guitar, you're not going to get anybody to like look like they're playing his guitar or something, you know? But who knows? By the time that he's working with a company that is developing the technology.
Right.
So who knows where it's going to...
Right. Illusion, and a good friend of mine, Jeff, is the CEO of the company. Mm-hmm. So they've got their heart in the right place. I know that they're big music fans, and they're doing it with the right intentions. That's for sure. How people will perceive it is going to really be interesting.
You never know. I mean, there's some successful ones out there. A friend of mine does the Roy Orbison Estate. He works with the Roy Orbison Estate, and they've been having a lot of success in Europe. Their tour sold out, and it was big venues.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic, and they got an orchestra. And I think it's you know, you're not seeing the real person,
right?
You know, and if you try to criticize it as if it is the real person, you're just in a losing proposition,
right?
But if you go because of the experience
and celebrate the music,
and just you have to be forgiving of the, you know, certain aspects of the reality of the situation, and have a good time, and then it's fine.
One more thing with you, and then we're going to bring some other people on. And again, I'd love for you to stay. You, of course, for many years had your own record label, Favored Nations. Mm-hmm. Do you still have it?
Yep, I do.
Okay, so you're a guy that's always keeping an eye out and has exposed some new talent and some new players.
Yeah.
We're in this world now where, because of the way music is distributed online, anybody can make an album, anybody can make a video, anybody can put it out there. So it becomes very hard for people to sort of navigate and find the good guys and the guys that are special and stand out. I find that even for what I do, people look to me, hey, give me a band, give me something to check out. So do you have a couple guitar players right now that maybe people listening have not heard, aren't household names, that you think are you know, of interest, that people should check out? Are there some emerging guys out there that you really like?
There's, if you're not hearing a guitar solo on the radio, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, like with contemporary pop music, it doesn't mean that that whole genre is still not, you know, crazy fascinating to people. I mean, I see the generations. I'm two generations almost removed from when I was 22, 23, you know, even in the David Lee Roth days. And I see these players doing things now that are just stunning. Mm. So there's always this constant movement of people that are fascinated with raising the bar on the instrument. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Now there's one way to raise it is by practicing your ass off. You know what I mean? And you look and see what people were doing before you, and you take it from there. But a lot of times it doesn't have any staying power, because there's no real melody or harmony, you know, it's just kind of like finger exercises. But there are guys that are doing incredible things. Tosin is one of them.
Yeah. He plays like 15 strings or something.
Yeah.
How many strings is on Tosin's guitar? Like,
I know. I don't know if he's going to be able to do the Jen Axter, because he might have a hernia. String hernia. But there's this guy, Pliny. Have you heard of Pliny?
Pliny, no.
Pliny, P-L-I-N-I.
A one name guy.
One, yeah.
Okay, where's he from?
I think he's here in L.A., I'm not sure.
Pliny.
Pliny.
Young guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guy. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
Really great player, but that's, for me, my taste, you know, the notes, the way that that's hitting the chords, you know. There's this Italian kid, his name is Daniel Gattardo. He's just a freak. He's such a musical ear. See, that's what I look for, because you can't really impress me with practicing and being fast.
because that's fine. I mean, of course, I can be impressed by it. I can't play like these shredders today. But what really moves me is when I hear something that just it's got something more than just academics in it. Yeah.
One of the things I love about...
Oh, wait a minute. I played a track on Jason Becker's new record.
Oh, well, Jason is an amazing story, and he's got a record coming.
Yeah, he's an incredible phenomenon. The way this guy has accomplished things in the face of unthinkable limitations.
Incredible.
Do you know? And what a guy. He's so funny.
Yeah, for people that don't know his story in a nutshell, because we're coming up on a break, Jason, watch a documentary. I don't know if you've seen it, Steve, called Not Dead Yet.
Yeah,
and it's about Jason. Because Jason Becker, who actually played with Roth when he was diagnosed with ALS, and they found out, and he was supposed to be gone a long time ago.
Yeah,
and he is still there, and it's an unbelievably inspirational story. Back with more. With Steve Vai, Sebastian Bach, and a whole lot more from the Rainbow Bar and Grill in L.A. on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, you guys, if you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, I got relief for you. It's finally here. It's called TheraWorks Relief. It's a topical foam. It's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast. Plus, with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start, so you can get a full night's sleep or do the activities you love without having to worry about muscle cramps. I used this stuff one time, true story, on a cramp that I had in my calf that woke me up in agony in the middle of the night. Knock on wood, it has not returned since. TheraWorks Relief, it only takes minutes to apply. It absorbs quickly, and it does work. I recommend TheraWorks Relief to my family, my friends. The results, they speak for themselves. It's a life-changing product, and you don't even need a prescription. TheraWorks Relief, it is the choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Try TheraWorks Relief today and experience relief from muscle cramps for yourself. Get TheraWorks Relief in the pain relief aisle at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or by talking to your pharmacist. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. For instance, a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car, well, that'll improve your gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Pretty weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before they're buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get you back to the Rainbow and this week's podcast featuring Steve Vai and Sebastian Bach. Sebastian Bach is in the house.
Oh, yeah!
These people, man. Shout out to these people. They're my people.
This man loves his rock and roll as much as any of us, man. It's what I've always loved about him. He lives it, he breathes it, he eats it, he does everything to it, man.
I got
to
get a haircut, though, even though I just got one in 1987.
You still got your hair. You're lucky, yeah, man.
Speaking of 1987, I brought you a present.
What do you got? Whoa. Look at that. Wait, now, wait a minute. Is this 87?
No, that's 89.
89?
But this is, that's the first centerfold I ever had in Circus Magazine.
Look at this young, sexy man.
You guys remember Circus Magazine? You remember that? No. Okay.
And the crazy thing is, Sebastian still looks exactly the same. Look,
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
And Steve,
I attribute it all to clean living, right, Rainbow?
Yeah, exactly. Anybody that's seen Sebastian at the Rainbow,
Steve Vai is right over here, for God's sakes.
I saw you.
I just got Eat 'Em and Smile on vinyl.
Really?
Yes.
Nice. Nice.
I'm done, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't even have
it. It is
that.
Now Sebastian Bach's radio show. Yay! Go ahead, Baz. Just go.
I get very starstruck around this guy right here.
You played with him. I saw you play with him on the cruise.
Dude, I saw Steve Perry at Jerry Cantrell's birthday party.
Yeah.
I couldn't even speak. It's like, oh, well, there you are. Like, it's like.
Yeah, it's weird.
How is it playing Yankee Rose on the cruise with Steve?
Well, I watched the video of it, and it's very exciting. I wish we would have got it higher quality, but I love
it. Is this a video
that.
Of it?
Yeah.
I haven't
seen
it.
It's on YouTube. It's pretty good.
Oh, I got to check it out.
Yeah.
I saw us doing Tom Sawyer. Yeah, we did that too.
No, we did the David Lee Roth better.
Okay.
I love that album, Eat 'Em and Smile.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
You guys like that album?
Yeah.
What are some of the... Side two...
Tobacco Road?
No. The more obscure one. Hey, man, that a roll, man, down.
Oh, that's...
look at the trouble.
Big Trouble.
And then it's in his eyes. I love that music.
Steve just said he's nailing it. No, you just said he's nailing it.
He's nailing it.
Yeah, he's nailing it. I got you. It's nailing it.
Well, if I'm jamming with Steve Vai, I better nail it.
How long have you guys known each other for a while? Or
the first time I ever met Steve Vai was backstage on the.
Was it David Lee Roth?
Yes, but it was the Eat 'Em and Smile tour. Yes, I think it was in Phoenix, Arizona.
It was in Phoenix, Arizona. Or Concord, California. I think.
No, the first time I met, because I was with the band Madam X, and they brought me backstage. Yeah. And I have a vivid memory of this because David Lee Roth had strippers in a baby pool filled up full of baby oil, a kiddie pool.
Yep.
And I was like, wow. And it was all like lit and stuff. It was all like blue lights.
He's got the Roth stories that to please, I'll tell you that.
I was like, yeah, there's a kiddie pool backstage with baby oil in it and chicks like, you know.
And Baz is like, you were like, I
can't. Wait, we can't say that in this era.
You can say anything you want.
We can't mention
it. Come on.
No, that's another time. We're all going to get sued.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to lose my job as a rock star.
But
this is only good press.
Steve, did you guys have the baby pool when you were in the band? The whole
at
the time. You remember?
I can't even tell you all the things that we saw.
You did one interview where I mean, I don't shock easy, but you did one interview where they said, "Hey, tell us about backstage." You said, "Well, first time I ever went back with Dave, there was a girl walking around in her hands with a bottle of wine shoved up her ass."
No. No. I gotta clarify.
Did I hear
that.
Something like this? Right?
No, it's much better than that.
What?
Yeah,
it's better than
that. It was
that.
My first.
Like, well,
the first
do you
night.
Even do that?
Like, first, yeah. No, she was walking on her hands.
That's what I said.
And she was naked. And she had a tech, one of the notorious techs, walking alongside of her, and he had the bottle of wine. And she had a tube coming out of her butt with a funnel on the end.
Hey, this is crazy.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
And then like this. Just, I guess,
now,
it was
that's
like
a
favorite
rock and roll party,
guy,
right?
You know? Yeah.
Right, Rainbow?
Yeah. And
that was the first night of the tour.
That is
and
crazy.
In talking to a lot of artists over my decades of doing this, I find out it's always the techs, isn't it? Yeah. The really fucked up people
are
the techs.
You know, the techs, right. I remember I had a bus driver on the Slave to the Grind tour. Who I had, and he was my guy. He was cool. And then I bought Marilyn Manson's book, and he was like the star of Marilyn Manson's book. I go, this is the same guy, right? Go read the book. He was my driver before that.
I've read Manson's book. You got to really be nuts if you upstaged Manson as this bus driver. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Like, this guy went on to fame. Like, he's the star of the book.
Okay. So, Baz, what do you got? You have been out on the road playing a lot lately. You got a whole nother run of dates coming up. You've been hitting it hard, huh?
I'm about to do 50 cities in America, United States of America.
Nice.
And, you know, Bobby Jar Zombeck on drums, who's I've played with for over 10 years. And Brent Woods, our friend.
I was at dinner with him last night. He told me that Bobby's one of the best drummers he's ever played with in his life. Yeah.
Bobby is from the Halford Band, Resurrection. I know everybody has a record called Resurrection, but Halford had the first one, I think.
Yeah. And, of course, and you got Rob DeLuca on bass.
Yes.
Killer band. You've had this band together for a while.
I've had the band together for longer than Skid Row was together.
Yeah.
So it's like we're together. And I'm not surprising anybody with new members all the time. It's like everybody knows. Bobby has his own fans. Like, my guys have their own fans. So it's good.
And the thing I love about what you're doing, man, if you've seen Sebastian with this band, it's all raw, it's real, it's electric, it's not any sort of, you see these bands running 100 fake tracks and all this stuff. It is as in your face and real as it should be.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but we don't even know how to do that. We have opening,
that's a good thing.
We have opening bands that yeah. come in yeah. and all their backgrounds are like Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Ridiculous.
And I'm going, well, how do you guys do that? And they tell you, they play to the same tempo. There's no spontaneity. You have to do the same thing
same
every night.
Click, yeah.
We stop the show every song, like, if there's a fight or, I mean, it's a spontaneous thing.
That's rock and roll. That's how it should be.
I did a electronica song with this band, Dada Life, right? A computer. It was a big hit. It was called Born to Rage. I got a platinum record from it. EDM, it's called.
Yeah.
But then they wanted me to do it live. I go, sure, I'd love to. Yeah. So it was the Electric Daisy Carnival in Vegas, like 500,000
yeah,
people.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I went on it. I was the last guy on. It was like 5 a.m. The sun's coming up. But I come out, and there's all these people, and I'm playing to a laptop.
Yeah.
And I can't. I'm way ahead. I'm like, it's like.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling. Yeah. You know, but if I feel like that in rock and roll, my drummer can play like that,
Yeah.
So to me, that's the way it should be.
Steve, you don't have, you do all instrumental with your own thing, so you don't have to deal with guys like Sebastian.
But you probably use the tapes sometimes for like keyboard effects or something.
Sometimes, yeah, because sometimes some of the arrangements are really big,
right,
but Jeremy, he triggers certain points.
Right.
Sometimes.
But it's not like the whole night is like...
Well, the last tour was because I had video that was sunk.
Okay.
But it is confining, and it's risky, And there is a tight feel to it. But, he knows how to... Jeremy. He knows how to go in.
Jeremy Coulson.
But as a singer, Baz, the reason why I bring that up is because Sebastian's voice is still unbelievable. And I have people that call my radio show with some of these new bands, and they're like, I heard them, they sounded amazing. It's like, anyone can sound amazing if everything is not, it's on a track and you're not really hearing what you're hearing. So I have mad respect for the people like yourself that absolutely are doing it all real.
Well, there's some older guys that are inspiration, like Steven Tyler. I mean, come on.
The best.
I saw him on a morning show like Hoda and Cotby.
Recently,
And he sang like
insane.
The funny thing when he's...
And he's 70.
Yeah,
wow.
That's what I'm saying.
When he starts singing, he transforms into like a totally different person.
And you know who else is ridiculous, who I just saw recently, is Glenn Hughes.
Oh man. Yeah.
Glenn Hughes
his
is...
His high notes
continues.
Are
beyond
crazy.
Any comprehension what Glenn Hughes is able to do. And if you read his book, you're amazed he's even still alive, let alone able to sing.
I like the story in his book where he was so high... He was driving home one night. He could only make left turns. He's like, I couldn't go right. I had to go left the whole night. And it took me so long to get home that way. I was like, I got to go left. I got to go. That's like living in Washington.
How about when he's dating Linda? How about when he's dating Linda Blair and he shit himself and he didn't know it?
Well, that's not very attractive.
Well, at least
what a turn on, Glenn.
He's the best, man. He's unbelievable. Hey, Sebastian. So when was the first time you came here to the Rainbow? You remember?
Oh my gosh. Okay, that was like 1987, I think. That's when I joined.
Were you Madame X or when you just joined
Skid? No, it was Skid Row.
Okay.
And here's what I remember. Back then, the streets were as packed.
Yeah,
Steve was saying that earlier. Yeah.
You could take 20 minutes to get 10 feet.
Yeah, and I was staying at the Riot House. Now it's called the Andaz. What the hell is the Andaz?
I don't know.
Anyways, the Riot House. To me, that's a more catchy name.
Right.
So I was walking here from there. And I took with my tour manager, Terry Sasser, just me and him. And like 5 feet, there was like two people behind me. 10 feet, there was like 10 people behind me. 30 feet up the block, there was like 100 people. Well, there he is. That's him. And I'm going, what the hell? And by the time we got here, it was like the Pied Piper.
So that was before the first record had even come out.
It was right around like.
So around 89
ish. Yeah, it was 89. No, I came here. I came here before that with Doc. When I first met Doc McGee.
You came here.
So when I walked up from there, that was the second time I came here.
What was. So I imagine.
First time I came here, nobody followed me.
Just some tall guy walking in the rainbow.
A big deal.
So you did you ever hang with Lemmy here?
I hung with Lemmy. It's in my book. Lemmy, as you guys know, lived right across the street, right in that building. And you know, I used to think I could party with the big boys. Oof. When I found out that night, it's hard to party with Lemmy.
Yeah.
My nose burnt really bad, and I just kept. He had a book of lyrics in his Nazi memorabilia room because he did. He had all this. He had like Nazi memorabilia next to like Corning Tupperware.
He's really into
like,
the whole war thing.
Like it's in the kitchen. Like here's my SS hat next to like my box of Cheerios.
Ozzy told me a great story when that. They were on tour, right? They were doing a big festival tour, and everybody's trying to keep up with Lemmy, you know, because he'll walk around and for 5 days he stayed up, and didn't move. You know, he wasn't affected at all. He's still carrying on conversations, and
right.
Everybody's trying to keep up with him, and then finally they're all falling, and Ozzy goes up to him and says, "Fucking hell, man! Well, how do you do it? Everybody's just passing out. You're still just like," and he goes, "After a while, you coast."
But that's the.
Well, I hope. Let's hear for Lemmy coasting wherever he is right now tonight.
Raising a Jack and Coke to him right now. But the thing about Lem.
Really, drinking a Jack and Coke?
Yeah. Somebody, you're just jealous. You want one?
No, here's the deal, dude. Last time I was with you, you said, okay, we're going to do the bowling thing, right?
Which is coming up.
You're
going to bowl
again?
Yeah, and
then you said, okay, it starts at 8. So I got there at 8. But it didn't start at 8. It started at 10.
Well, that was the party.
So by the time 10 rolled around, I'm fucking.
But everybody,
like, I blew
is.
The game. I would have come to win, dude.
We're doing it again. Are you in this year?
I'll come at the right time. I'm not going to do it all drunk.
Tom Morello was trying to figure out why we lost. I said, because
that's
we drank too much.
I was like, thought this thing started at 8 o'clock. It's like 10 o'clock.
We're doing it again October 25th. So for the Dio Cancer Fund. And remember, Ronnie, let's raise one to Ronnie as well.
And fuck cancer.
Yeah.
Fuck cancer. I want to say that as a salute to Mr. Nick John from the Rick Sales organization who just died this week, and we're going to his service on Sunday, and he was a great manager.
Great
guy. Mastodon and
Gojira.
Bullet for my Valentine. And
Gojira.
So he was a buddy of ours, and fuck cancer.
Yep. Nick was a huge listener of this show and a great, great guy, and he will be missed. I was stunned when I heard he passed away. But the bowling thing's coming up again, so we're doing that again at the end of next month. And tell me before we run out of time, what are you beyond the dates coming up? You're working on new music? What are you doing?
Yes, I have a new record deal that I'm about to be announcing, and I've got a new album that I'm working on with John Five. It'll be our third album in a row. And Steve Stevens has a great song on it. And you know, there was a guy named Steve Vai.
Wait,
he said he had some riffs on his laptop lying around.
Come on over. I'll play them for you.
Oh, did you hear that? Come on. I'm holding you to it. Okay. I'm holding you to it. Now, you know what? I have to tell you this about Steve.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think you know what I'm going to say. Listen,
these aren't more stories about the David Lee Roth days. Are
no,
more strippers
no.
and tubs.
Just even before that.
Okay.
Going way back, you told me this. Steve told me. Steve knows that we're all big Kiss fans.
Right.
You guys like Kiss. Me and Eddie love Kiss.
All of Slash's band was just here before you walked in. Brent and Todd and those guys. And Fitz is playing in Gene's solo band. So he's in Gene's ear about all these songs. And we're all Kiss freaks.
So you know what Steve has? What do you want to tell him?
I think I already told him.
Did?
Yeah, the film, the footage. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He just said it earlier before you got here.
Yeah.
So you had a movie that you shot of Kiss.
8mm was my grandfather's camera, and I was fooling around with it, and I took it to the concert. Back then, you were allowed to bring cameras in.
What tour was it?
Unlike now.
Oh, my God.
Steve, was it like 74? Yeah,
like now. Well, I was like, yeah, right, like now. I don't know. I was 13, so it was like 1972, 73.
You said it was at like the Coventry, right?
The Calderon Concert Hall in Hempstead.
Oh, so it was before the first record even came out.
Yeah, they weren't even wearing a lot of makeup.
Oh, Sebastian's losing his mind.
Steve Vai's personal childhood Kiss film. I mean, now that's a rock and roll collectible. Steve, I mean, that really is.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
I'm going to come and I'll listen to your music, but I want to see the Kiss movie.
I'll dig it up.
Steve, do you know where it is?
It's it's buried someplace in the attic. I mean, I know I got it.
People would flip out.
Oh, no, but no, people. It's just a little clip. I didn't know what I was doing.
Is there audio, too, or just video?
No audio.
Oh, just video.
Yeah.
Still.
It doesn't matter.
No, this is way back. I mean, cameras didn't have audio.
Kiss freaks would lose their minds to see the Steve Vai childhood movie that he shot on his grandpa's camera.
There you go.
Speaking of John 5, he's got this Instagram account now that he's doing where every day he posts a different Kiss collectible up there. John is everywhere. I just interviewed Steve Perry. He was just on my show. And the first thing I say, so who worked on your record? He goes, well, I got a song with John 5. I'm like, I text John. I go, who don't you write songs with? What are you doing?
You know, this brings up a point that I think you might have read about. Of course, I know Steve has, is that, you know, like Guitar Center. It's having a rough time, maybe going through bankruptcy. The CEO of Guitar Center or whatever says the reason is because there's no new Guitar Heroes. No, but he says that was the model that business mm-hmm. was built upon, mm-hmm. and that's where all their success came from. Guys like you, guys mm-hmm. like Eddie Van Halen, guys like John 5. But the reason John 5 is on all these albums, nobody has those skills that he has. And he's prolific. Like, when I ask him, hey, you want to do some tunes? He immediately, emails me, four songs that he is, for me, you know. There's not a new wave of musicians that look at it like you do, or John 5. Or I'm just saying it's like a dying art. And if you guys all want to be rock stars, you should start practicing. Like,
by a mirror.
I mean, a guy like John 5 is always playing.
Well, he can really play. You know,
but
what
that's
I mean?
Through years of
yeah. And he plays with a million styles and with people like Katie Lang and Leonard Skinner, like stuff you'd never expect. And he's like the most normal, like chill guy ever, too. I mean, he's a great.
But there's a big hole in the market for a guy that is that good. Back in the 80s and the 70s, every kid wanted to play the guitar and put in the hours in his bedroom and rehearsed and practiced and got a band going. Now it doesn't seem like people think it's too easy, or maybe they don't want to put in the time, or you know.
Well, they got to find the passion, and they got to find that there's no real popular genre that they're hearing too. That they're playing. I mean, you know, in the metal field, it's still very strong in the underground. But that's very different than, the kind of thing that we used to do.
That's very true.
You know, I read an interview recently with Slash, who's playing right down the block in a little bit. And he was somebody asked him about Greta Van Fleet. And he said, I wish they didn't sound so much like Led Zeppelin. But what I like is the fact that they're a guitar band that is inspiring young people to pick up guitars.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really valid point, because that's what you need. And in addition to what Baz said, I mean, be able to play great, but to me, the great intangible that a guy like John has, or a guy like you have, Steve, or is the ability to write the songs.
Yeah.
Like you can practice your ass off, but you can't come up and create great songs. To be able to create out of thin, to me as a fan, it's always been the most incredible thing to me to watch musicians, whether they be lyricists, music, whatever, to out of thin, like just think out of thin air to create.
Yeah. Like, it's fun. Come on.
Like one day, Steven Tyler sat down and out of the blue, Dream On came into his head. Like, where does that happen? Like, in what universe? That's so foreign to me.
You're so into it, dude.
You do it. You just do it differently.
I couldn't do it.
No, you don't do it musically, but you do it differently.
You,
and you know what? I will say this. Something interesting statistic about Guitar Center, what I discovered was last year, the larger percentage of guitars were sold to women than men.
Oh, really?
It was like 51% or 52%. Yeah.
And so I guitar think heroin will be the new.
And I think their troubles are just a lot of people are getting guitars in different ways now, easier and cheaper.
Well, I think that there's a girl like Taylor Swift, you know, who gets her guitar out and plays it on the stage.
Yeah, and you know
that's like putting that into their mind.
Or a shout out to Nita Strauss, who plays an Alice Cooper's band.
Orianthi.
They're selling guitars.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Are there any? Have you seen any female guitarists on the scene coming up, Steve? That have caught your eye as players?
Well, Nita is one of the ones that stands out.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, Orianthi.
Yeah. Yeah. She's been doing it for a while. And well, now that her and Richie broke up, you know, I don't know where that's. They were attached at the hip there for a while. So we'll see what Orianthi ends up doing.
She's very, very good.
Yeah. She's very, very talented. So when does the tour start, Sebastian? The next run?
Next Thursday.
He's digging for dates.
If I can read them, I'm bored of hell out of
here. Well, I can tell you, I'm going to be hosting a show with Sebastian and Tulsa.
That's right.
On October 5th, which is at the IDL Ballroom,
oh,
and you've got a whole string of dates.
You know what stinks is when you can't see.
It's called getting old, brother.
I know, but it's
that can suck.
Gosh, I don't want to go on stage like in reading glasses.
You want to buy a bigger teleprompter.
That's right. That's it. If I could read some of these dates, I mean, is that boring?
Well, I think because we got people listening all over America and Canada, we should just tell them to go to your website. They're probably there, right?
Go to my website.
Which is it just your name? SebastianVach.com?
No, go to my website. It's stevevi.com. S-T-E-V.
Steve, yours is actually just vi.com, isn't it?
Vi.com.
V-A-I.com. So.
Oh, okay.
So. Baz,
somebody else had stevevi.com.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, like 10 others.
Who's this guy?
Again, when you go to Steve's site, he's doing this Jamathon, and that is jamathon.org?
Jamathon.org. You should come down, Sebastian, at 28th. Well, you're going to be on tour. Yeah. 28th, 29th, and 30th of September.
Where is it? What is
it's
it?
It's a Musicians Institute. 52 hours of nonstop playing.
Wow.
Yep.
Did you ever run?
Text to donate. I forgot that before. Text 20222. And then Jam5, and it's a simple $5 donation for extraordinary families. That just goes right on your phone bill. Very simple.
That's cool.
What's the text code again?
20222, and then Jam, J-A-M-5, or 25 if you want to make $25.
And Sebastian, you mentioned it before. You put out your book, 2 years ago now?
Yes.
About 2 years ago? Uh-huh. 18 in Life on Skid Row. You guys read that book. It's a phenomenal
book
if you had a chance to check it
the
out.
The author's quite talented.
What's now that the book's been out a little bit, like what is your are you happy you wrote it? Is there things in there you wish you would have put or you didn't put? Or everybody has that revisionist moment at some point.
Well,
writer's remorse.
It's kind of weird because as that was being done, there was talk about our old band getting back together, right? Mm-hmm. And Rick Sales, my manager, says, "Take everything bad that you said about those guys out of the book right now." I go, "Well, are you sure?" He goes, "Yes." I go, "Okay." And I was like hanging out with Scotty Hill. He's at my house and all this. And I go, "I'm going to take out, you know, some stuff." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Make sure you," he goes, "just do it. Do it. Just take it." So I took everything bad out. And then nothing happened.
So what you're saying
maybe
is
my next
so everybody's
book,
now
maybe,
waiting for volume two.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe the next book will be everything that I took out of the first one.
Was there a lot?
I don't know how to answer this.
Enough that he had to take something out.
You know, Neil Peart.
Is there enough for a whole nother book?
No, Neil Peart said something really, really smart. Well, that's because he's Neil Peart and it's a day ending and why. But he said that in a book, you don't put people down in a book, okay? Because books are forever. Books are going to be here. Book is not the internet. The internet is just like a big nothing, really. Like it's you read something, it's gone the next day. But a book is forever. So you don't want to be putting people down in your book. And I really consciously did that. I remember, I love Sammy Hagar, right?
Yeah, so do I, yeah.
I don't know if you read his book.
I did.
I couldn't
believe what he put in his book about Eddie Van Halen with like his dirty towels from the shower, like in the corner of the room. And I'm like, I could have every page. And then,
did you read Noel Monk's book?
But then even Sammy said,
He held back.
He said that his brother said, dude, you went off on Eddie in your book like pretty hard. And then he said, you know, looking back, he did, because it was a, like a lot of personal,
right,
you know, personal hygiene stuff. And like, it's like, you know, Eddie farted and we don't need to. It's a little TMI for me. But anyways, but Sammy, you know.
But it smelled great.
It smelled like eruption sounded. It was a
Eddie erupted.
Eddie erupted. That's the name of the chapter.
I got I got 2 minutes left. Do you still hold out hope that one day we will see the Skid Row reunion?
It's not my
I know fault. It's not, but do you personally still hold out hope that we'll see it?
I have too much going on myself to think about that all the time. I do know one thing. January of 2019 is the 30th anniversary of the first Skid Row record coming out.
Wow. 30 years.
And you only get one 30-year anniversary. So I don't know what those guys are thinking. I've texted them, got no response. But I will be commemorating it in some way. If those guys want to get into it, you know, great. But if they're going to ignore it, I'm not going to ignore it.
So will you go out and play the record if they don't want to do it on your own?
I've been offered to do that. Yes, I have been.
So,
you know.
Oh, it's not that.
It's that's not how the business works, you know.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, we're out of time here, but everybody go see Sebastian on tour, SebastianBach.com for all the dates.
You can also go see Sebastian Bach at the bar in about 3 minutes.
Well, hope you guys enjoyed that. I'll tell you what, doing those rainbow broadcasts is an absolute blast. Next one coming up in a couple of weeks, and keep an eye on my social media. At Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'll let you know exactly when it's going to be. Totally free to get into. If you're in Southern California, come down and join us. We do it from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. It's broadcast live on Sirius XM. You never know who's going to swing by. Another one coming up very, very, very soon. Thanks to Steve Vai. Thanks to Sebastian Bach. Thanks to all the guests that dropped by. Thanks to Katie Irizarry for producing the podcast and working on that audio as always. I'll see you guys next week for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast here on podcast1.com and, of course, iTunes.
TV producer and my best friend Alexis Linkletter, and we are so excited that we are finally launching our true crime podcast called The First Degree right here on Podcast One. And each week we are going to bring you the craziest true crime stories and talk to the people who are one degree away from each of these crazy events. And we've dragged crime journalist Billy Jensen along for the ride, and he can't get rid of us. Join us on The First Degree every Wednesday on podcast1.com and the PC One app. Also remember to rate and review.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.